Stores, I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, to be rebroadcast on July 5th, 2023 at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who's not sitting right there, but she'll be here in a minute. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can just email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I'm recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live, and then they are playing them at my normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at 91.7 FM. and WHUS.org. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or FMRadioFree.com. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, we're going to reset back to last week, and we're going to talk. I talked about my friend and friend of the show, Chris Kearns, who I got to ride with last weekend. So we got a little bit of an update from what was going on. And it was all about the right-hand hook. Someone made the infamous right-hand turn into him at the intersection. Ugh. And Chris said, thank you, Ron, for giving all the attention to a common problem and how we interact in traffic. So I'm just glad to hear that Chris is okay. And I got to ride with him on Saturday, which was kind of nice. And that brings me right on in and segues me to what? This week's rant. So I had a, you know, people who drive cars are just not all on top of it. Anyway, I had a classic encounter Friday morning, riding back from the community center with my friend Karen, and there was a car coming from behind us and another approaching us from up front. I made the decision to move out into the road as I saw the car from behind heading straight for the oncoming car. We've seen this so many times before. I know you guys have if you've been out on the road. Car approaching is forced off the road as the aggressive driver from the rear blasts by the cyclist, endangering everyone involved. This is called stupid. Okay, once a car approaching us went by, we were going downhill at over the speed limit, 25 miles per hour. We were in the town of Chaplin, and the speed limit, believe it or not, in the town of Chaplin is 25 miles per hour, which is great on the back roads. And there was a four-way stop also at the bottom of the hill that we were now going the speed limit or even a couple miles an hour faster. And so I informed Karen to take the lane, and we went out and took the lane, and the comment from Karen was, that woman behind us is not very happy. And and I said, don't worry about it. She can't get by us safely. Don't worry about it. So we're going down the hill, and then we made a left-hand turn at the stop sign, and the woman driving the SUV made a right-hand turn. And while she did it, she was screaming out her window about us being out in the middle of the road. I attempted to get her to stop and talk, and I motioned to her to come back and talk to me. I yelled out, please come talk to me about this. She tapped her brakes like she was going to pull over. I turned around when I saw that and rode towards her vehicle, and of course she sped off because she didn't want to have the encounter with the guy on the bike who was actually doing the right thing. You know, she's got her idea. I've got my idea. Anyway, so here's why this was an interesting story. And the scenario from her perspective, she would have passed us at 50 miles per hour, heading straight into the oncoming vehicle or just crowding us off the road. And to avoid the impending deadly head-on that she was going to have with this vehicle that was coming up towards her. So then she would have had to jump hard on her anti-lock brakes to be able to possibly make the stop sign at 50 miles an hour on a 25-mile-an-hour road. Probably not going to happen. Anyway, impossible situation that would have not even been attempted if we were a motorized vehicle going at the speed limit. Think about that. If I was in a car, okay, and that's exactly what I would have told her if she had the patience to actually talk to me about it. I would have said, look, if I was a car going the speed limit down the road and you felt that you needed to get, you probably wouldn't have passed me. But because I'm on a bicycle, I am now vulnerable. Therefore, I am expendable in your eyes, which is just really not good. So just be careful. Be safe. And I got another additional comment on this. Chris brought the police report with him. Okay, so I got a chance to take a look at the police report, and guess what? Guys run off the road, right-hand hook, the right-hand turn into him, no charges against the driver of the motorized vehicle. It was determined that the motorized vehicle was at fault, but it was not, there were any charges that were made. Now, Connecticut has a law. This was effectively put in place. This is Connecticut General Statute Section 14-232, effective October 1st, 2008, requires Connecticut motorists to allow at least 3 feet of separation when overtaking and passing cyclists. Failure to do so could cause motorists to receive a fine under the Motor Vehicle Code, failure to grant the right of way to a bicycle. That is 14-242. If you're looking for the specifics on that one, all you training lawyers. So I took a look at this because I wanted to kind of see what that was all about. And, the fine is basically $50. The fee for processing the fine is $7. The surcharge on the fee is $35. The STF, I have no idea what that is also $25, probably some court fee. And then there is also another $15 charge. Now that is improper passing, safe distance, cutting in. All right. That's $132. The bike law states $100. Second offense, $250. Third offense, $500. If you don't push this, if you don't actually tell your local law enforcement officer or his superior or her superior that this was not filed on that report and the driver was not charged, then the next time they do it, which they will do it again because they can get away with it because they never got fined for it. They didn't even get a written warning for it. All right. Then they will do it again. And if they do it again, now we start all over again because they never got fined the first time. So it's really important to make sure if you're in this type of situation and you have a law, which most of the states have now, a spacing law, that you pursue it to the point where the driver does get charged the $100. If nothing else, it's money to help handle the paperwork that the officer had to go through and the time that the officer had to spend taking care of the situation. So, to my police friends out there, is it time that we have a refresher course? I mean, really, 2008, this went in 2008. No mention of it on the ticket. I'm mildly irritated, which brings me to my rant of the week. But of course, there's more in the show, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that when we get there. On a positive side, hey Franny, what time is it? What day is it?
It's Nancy and Abraham's anniversary. It's the 30th anniversary.
That's not what I was thinking about. Aww. But that is very nice. That's very nice. Most of our listeners probably don't know who Nancy and Abraham are, but that's okay. What else is it, Fran?
Tomorrow's the 4th of July.
Tomorrow is the 4th of July. That's big news, okay? This is very positive. But what else is going on right now?
Saturday was Canada Day. And Frances's birthday.
What do I do with her? It's the Tour de France. It's the Tour de France. Yes, siree. This is day 3 of the Tour de France that I am broadcasting on right now. It started on Saturday, which is way, way cool. Really different Tour de France this year. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. Actually, we'll talk a lot about that in the show because, you know, it's the Tour de France. And let's see, other positive side things. Also, finally, almost finished the Netflix documentary Unchained. I am blown away at how good this production is. If you have not had a chance to do this, I'm not trying to force you to do anything or whatever. Find a friend maybe who has Netflix if you don't want to spend the money on it. But I got to tell you, it's worth it. It's worth it just to watch the 8 episodes. If you never had any idea about what bike racing was all about, this will really, really open your eyes. So anyway, so you might want to check that out. Unchained is what it's called. Have a shout out to Connecticut and their new e-bike program. Huge shout out there. I got a phone call from my friend Richard yesterday and we were chatting about it and he said, oh my God, what's going on in Connecticut? You guys are so on top of it. That e-bike program is super. Yeah, there's kickbacks for getting an e-bike now in the state of Connecticut. You go to ct.gov and just kind of Google about and you'll find your way to the site and you can apply for the money to subsidize your e-bike. It ranges anywhere from a minimum of $500 up to a maximum of $1,500. Those who have low incomes qualify for higher amounts. It's really like super. It really is cool. And I had told my friend Richard I spent some time on a webinar learning about it. And I talked about it a little bit last week on the show too. So anyway, we're going to keep our eyes on that e-bike program because I have applied because I figured, why not? You know, let me see what I can do. I don't know what they'll give me, but it would be kind of nice. There are a specific number of and certain brands of bicycles that are available for the rebate program. You can't just use anything out there. You've got to go to the specific approved ones because there's a safety issue there. You know, we don't want to be burning down the tenement houses like they are in New York City and, you know, all the other fun things that go along with electric vehicles. I'll leave that at vehicles. Anyway, yeah, Connecticut's got a really cool e-bike program. It's so cool that we're doing this. Very progressive. Big shout out to the state of Connecticut. Now, if you could just get your law enforcement to take care of our issues when we have bicycle/motorized vehicle confrontations, then we'll be all set. And the other thing on my list of positive things, the Willimantic Boombox Parade. Yeah. The Willimantic Boombox Parade. It's a silly thing. It happened a number of years ago. How long ago was it? It was like 32 years ago, maybe, something like that. I remember getting a phone call. It must have been longer than that. Not sure. Anyway, I remember getting a phone call from my friend Kathy Clark, who is unfortunately no longer with us. But she called me up and said, Ron, we need your help. We're putting this big parade on. And I don't know if I have anybody coming, but I have like it hit the New York Times. And now we've got CBS, NBC and ABC bringing film crews up and I need your help. And I looked at I was on the phone with her. Remember those things, phones? You used to pick them up. They were hung on the wall. You know, it was kind of cool. Anyway, I said to her, Kathy, it is the 4th of July, and I am so busy. I was at the bike shop at that time. I am so busy. I have absolutely no time for this. She goes, please do something. I know you will. You're clever. You're creative. Do it. I need to see you there. So what did we do? I went digging around in the back of the bike shop and I found a refrigerator dolly and I screwed a piece of plywood down on it and I put my ex-wife Kathy on it and she dressed up like the parade queen with a little sash and the whole thing and we put our golden retriever on there and I pulled her down the street on my mountain bike. And that was us. We had camera crews all over us. It was goofy. It was silly. And that's what the Boombox Parade is all about. It's all about being goofy, being silly, making statements. I have since advanced to doing political statements on my bike. They generally tend to be bicycle oriented. And this year's theme is, and I will hold it up for your camera right here, but I will tell you for you audio people, people ride bicycles. My plan this year is to try to humanize the whole bicycle thing. Talk about that a little bit more in the show, and I'll get more to some details at that point. Mechanical minute and safety tips and cycling tips. How about that sticky front derailleur, huh, Franny?
Oh, it was the derailleur.
So Franny said, I can't shift my bike. And I knew it wasn't right because it just didn't feel right when I had it up on the stand before our Saturday ride. But she said, I have no big ring. I have nothing. And of course, we went on this really hilly ride where you kind of need the big ring for going downhill.
Well, it mattered sometimes.
Well, going downhill is
yeah,
you want your big
but
ring.
I shouldn't have been going that fast because my ride wasn't super fast.
That doesn't matter. Anyway, so what do you do about that sticky front derailleur? Start from the beginning. Okay, release the cable from the derailleur. Check the function of the derailleur. Does the derailleur move back and forth with ease? Is it also a little sticky? Is it full of grit and grime? You gotta look at that. I would highly recommend cleaning it really well. You may have to actually take it off to do that, or you may be able to do it on the bike. That's why we have old toothbrushes or toothbrushes that you can pick up at the dollar store. And you can use those for like getting into those little tiny small parts and moving everything around, a little bit of solvent. I have an itch. And that is, so you want to really clean it out good so the movement on it is really, really smooth and sweet. And if that doesn't work, which it didn't in this case, then you may have to look at replacing the front derailleur, which is what I ended up doing. I had another one that was going to function just fine, and so I threw that front derailleur out and went for another one. Now, that's the first thing you start with. The next culprit is going to be the cable. You're going to look and you're going to see what's going on with the cable and is it sticky? And yeah, it was really sticky. I flipped it from the lever. She has STI levers on her bike. I flipped it from the lever and it just didn't feel like buttery smooth. You know, it didn't feel as smooth as it should be. So what does that mean? Replace the cable. Let's get rid of it. And so when I did, of course, it's a carbon bike. It has internal cable routing. It's not an easy job. It doesn't happen very, very easily. But, you know, there are little tricks to that too. And I'm getting far better at that as I, you know, have done a number of these. But as I pull it out and I investigate, the cable was starting to get, you know, it had a lot of corrosion on it and it just didn't look very good. And it really pulled out of the lower channel with difficulty. So I ended up taking off the lower channel piece, which is held on by an Allen wrench on this particular bike. I ended up pulling it off and then trying to run a little bit larger cable is what I like to use. I use like a brake cable or something like that through there and couldn't get through. It just jammed right up. It just was a mess in there. So there's my first problem down there. But in the meantime, I've got it pulled apart. So I pull off the cable. I pulled the cable out of the lever, lubricated the lever, looked at that, checked that out, make sure everything was okay there. And then I replaced all the housing with brand new housing. So any of the housing that was there from before is now new housing. And now there is a brand new cable too. And it glides through very smooth now. Really, really nice. Now we get back to that problem with the channel on the bottom. So the way that her bike is designed is she and I both have Bianchi Infinito CVs. It's designed so that the cable goes down through the frame and then goes into this routed. It's like a, you know, it's just a channel for it to come through, and then it goes into a tubular shape thing, and the cable comes up and through the frame that way, and that tubular piece is designed so that the cable won't rub against the carbon and then eventually cut the carbon fiber frame or create some resistance, and that thing was just jammed up. So what do you do? Okay, here's your solution to that problem. You get a small drill, and you basically drill it out is what you do. Didn't come out easy. I got to tell you right now, I gunked up the drill bit completely, had to clean the drill bit out, and then gunked it up again. And then I kept adding lubrication to it as I was spinning the drill bit, and eventually it came out nice and clean. From that point, I took a larger diameter brake cable, and I ran it through with lubrication back and forth until it came through so clean that there was no sign of any kind of grit or dirt or anything on it, and then put it through. And then I put a new derailleur on the front. So it works a lot better. The cable will probably stretch a little bit, so I will be going back to take care of that in the next couple of weeks or so. I'll keep my eyes on that. But it's shifting and working. So that's how you do it. You kind of start from the very beginning. Just release the cable, start over, start it all over again like you're doing a brand new installation, because you generally have to do a brand new installation. Now, tricky part, and this is the one that a lot of people get confused with, and what I like to try to point out, and that is, okay, I've got an internally routed cable, but it's not internal all the way, so there's not like a channel that starts right where it goes in and ends where it comes out. No, the cable's just running around free in the inside. So what do you do about that? The simple solution, a magnet. Okay, the magnet, because carbon fiber is non-magnetic, but the cable is, a nice powerful magnet, you just get it in there on the inside and you draw the cable all the way down to the exit point. Pretty simple. Works really good. I also use one of my mom's old crochet hooks to hook the cable and pull it through. That's a really nice little piece of equipment for your toolbox. If you don't have a crochet hook, you might want to get one. You get a couple of different sizes. They're great for retrieving and pulling things through. But the magnet is essential. It's really, really good. And I've got a really super strong earth magnet that I use that pulls the cables through. So, and I think Park Tool and Pedro's and all the other tool companies, I think they all make a special magnet for pulling things with. If you want to get fancy and make it look cooler than what I have, but what I have works. So anyway, that's how you do it. We're going to move on to the content of the show, and we're going to talk a little bit more, and let's see here. Let's start with, I'm going to go right back to that Boombox Parade thing, because it's just such a cool thing. It's just so cool. I love the Boombox Parade. It's kind of one of my favorite things to do, and it's the 38th annual Boombox Parade. 38 years they've been putting this thing on. What is it? It begins at 11 a.m. on July 4th at Gilson Square in downtown Willimantic, and it marches for westbound for about two-thirds of a mile. It is a big bike ride here, folks, real big one, to Memorial Park. It's the largest parade of its kind in the world. Okay, the 36th and 37th Willie Boombox Parades returned to Main Street in 21 and 22. The parade went virtual during 2020, during the COVID pandemic, of course. But it's back, and it's happening, and it's really, really cool. And so what it means is, here's the history. In 1986, no marching band could be found for Wyndham's Memorial Day Parade. 5 weeks later, the Boombox Parade concept was born as WILI AM radio played the marching band music on the air while thousands marched and watched, loudly playing their radios or boomboxes. Remember those big things, the big boombox things? No other town has a parade like this. Anyone can march or enter a float And so, you know, you'll see a lot of interesting things, political statements, various things, old cars. Try not to get behind an old car if you're one of the walkers or one of the riders, because they really stink and it's probably not very good for you. But they play they play boombox parade music on the or marching music on the radio, and there's no official theme for the parade. My theme this year is, again, people ride bicycles. I'm going to try to humanize this whole bicycle thing. I'm finding that since COVID, when COVID first started, Fran and I would go out for these bike rides, and people would literally stop in the middle of the road to let us go by, because they'd wave and they were super friendly. And intersections where it wasn't our turn to go, that was always our turn to go, people were just incredibly considerate. And then, as things started settling down, people became far more aggressive, far more impatient. It's the worst I think I've ever seen it, quite honestly. And I just talked to another person the other day who said, you know what, I'm done with the road riding. I'm going to go back and ride my mountain bike. I'm going to do gravel road rides, and I'm not going to ride my bike on the road anymore. It's scaring people off the road. This is not the answer. Okay, this is not the answer at all. The answer is more butts on bikes on the road. Make the roads safer. Please don't succumb to the fear of people driving around in behemoth vehicles. There's one way to slow them down, and it's a great way. Put more bikes on the road. So anyway, that's me making a statement, and that's what I'm going to do at the parade on Wednesday. Tuesday. It's tomorrow. Okay, and we're gonna do a little boombox parading. It'll be a fun thing, believe me. So we will be meeting at Chilson Square at 10 a.m. and folks are very, very welcome to join us, actually encouraged to join us. So if you want to come into town and have a truly unique bit of fun, come join us. If you go to my Facebook page, my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, which is where I'm broadcasting from right now, you will find some signs that I have made that you're welcome to copy and make your own. I already showed you the People Ride Bikes ones. Here's a big one. People you know and affect your lives ride bicycles. What do I mean by that? Who rides bicycles? I'm going to go down the list here. Lawyers and judges, police officers, firefighters and first responders, doctors and surgeons, nurses and child care professionals, teachers, community leaders, contributors to your community, mothers and fathers, children, aunts and uncles, grandparents, brothers and sisters, neighbors. They all ride bicycles. Okay, so when you're having one of your tirade anxiety attack, I'm in my vehicle and I'm angry because I have to drive a vehicle, I don't know what it is that sets people off, I want you to understand that I'm just a guy out riding my bike. That's all. I might be riding my bike to work. I might be riding my bike home. I might be riding my bike to get to the grocery store. And I might be riding my bike home from there. Or I might be just a recreational cyclist who's out riding his bike because he would like the fitness, he would like the fresh air, and he would like to be out in the world on a bicycle, exploring, learning, contributing in some way to helping all of us out there. I have to go over this over and over. I will have signs plastered all over my bike tomorrow. I am going to be pulling two trailers. One is directly connected to the bike. The other one will be in tandem to the first trailer, and there will be lots of signage. Fran will be doing the same thing, only she'll be pulling one trailer. She doesn't know this yet. She'll figure it out. she says, I don't care. Just do something and I'll go. And that's basically what's going to happen here. So other signs that I will be carrying with me, because I get this argument all the time. Bicycle riders pay federal taxes. Federal taxes, not local or gas taxes, build the roads you drive your car on. Did you know that? Most people don't. And then this is one of my favorites. And this is in combination. We have two of them here. Wait times, okay, at drive-through restaurants. Let's call it McDonald's, okay? The wait time for an order from the moment they enter the drive-through to the moment that they get their order. Fast food, McDonald's. McDonald's actually wins the race here. The Taco Bell and Burger King and others that are on, Wendy's I think was on the list too. But McDonald's has the fastest one, so I gave them credit for being the fastest drive-through out there. 4 minutes and 30 seconds on the average to get your meal while sitting in your motorized vehicle waiting for your food. The bank line, this is the one that really interested me. The bank line, 5 minutes and 30 seconds, sitting in a drive-through bank line. I go in the bank, I do my thing, I walk back out, I'm out in like 3 minutes. People are just so lazy. Anyway, so why are these times important? Why is this such a big deal in Crazy Peddlin' Ron's world? Because the average wait time allowing safe passage, note, of a motorized vehicle passing a cyclist is 32 seconds. I said something about this morning in my class, and someone said, wow, that seems very long. And I said safe passage. I didn't say passage because, you know, I would say out here when I'm riding my bike probably is more like 15 seconds, but this is an average and it goes, you know, all around the country, and actually this came from Canada also. So the average is 32 seconds. Please be patient and kind. Cyclists are your friends. Okay? So you'll sit in a drive-thru at McDonald's for 4.5 minutes or a bank for 5.5 minutes, but you don't have 32 seconds to wait for the guy on the bike in front of you or the girl on the bike in front of you. Give me a break. Can you see where I go here with this whole boombox parade thing? It just gives me a chance to get out there and shout out and, you know, do my thing. I've got a big banner now, that a big, you know, 3x6 banner now that has Bicycle Talk on it and, you know, the ambassador of cycling, me. And so, you know, I have that too. So we make a little float kind of thing. It's all human powered float, and that's kind of what we do. So fun. Can't wait. It's tomorrow, and it's all done because I did a lot of work yesterday. Because what was it doing yesterday, Fran?
Raining. Raining a lot.
We need the rain. You know, no, nothing to be taken away from that. The rain, actually, I think it also helps calm down the smoke because we are still suffering from Canadian wildfires down here. So that's kind of a big deal. So back into the show. Why are drivers so ignorant when it comes to behavior around vulnerable users? There's a good question. So if you look it up and you poke around and you kind of get the same answer from most sites that I look at, mental health sites and, you know, other motorized vehicle sites and all, environmental factors such as crowded roads can boost anger behind the wheel. Certain psychological factors, including displaced anger and high life stress, are also linked to road rage. In addition, studies have found that people who experience road rage are more likely to misuse alcohol and drugs. Interesting, huh? So, yeah, that's the road rage. It's not you. It's not the person on the bike that's creating the road rage. It's the person behind the windshield of the vehicle that has other things going on in their life that are making things crazy for them, and they're getting crazy on you. You're just an object to them that is creating more anxiety. So when you're out there on your bike, this is really important, behave yourself, okay? Be nice, be kind, don't crowd the road. You know, use what you can. The beauty of my new Garmin radar system that I have on my bike is the fact that I can ride in the middle of the road, because if there's no one coming, I don't have to worry about it. But the second that someone shows up on the radar screen, I can then go over and make room for the vehicle to come by me. So, but you do have to respond. You know, I've talked about this on some group rides. I used to do a lot of group rides years ago, and I would say, look, when I say car back, if you're not in a single file line or a double, you know, a nice tight double line, in 5 seconds or less, you're going to have to deal with the wrath of Ron. I'm going to be all over you. I'm going to climb all over you about that. We need to look more professional when we're out riding our bikes on the roads. Just a big shout out there as far as that goes. So anyway, and again, I'll say it again and again and again, the best thing I have put on my bike in years, in the years of different additional equipment I can put on my bike is that rear radar. Boy, do I like that thing a lot. It's great. It lets you know from way back when a car is coming. It lets you know how fast they're coming because you can tell by the change in the color on the screen. And it's brilliant. It actually is brilliant. And I still use a mirror, and I will always use a mirror, but this allows me to be alert enough to know that I need to be peeking in my mirror to make sure that no one's going to come and run me over from behind, and to be sure that they're behaving themselves, which brings me to one more little piece here. Of course, Saturday's ride. So we're coming back on the ride on Saturday. I don't know what we do, like 32. I did more because I rode there and back, but it's like 32 miles. And we rode out to one of Fran's favorite little stops, the Hampton General Store. It's like a real old-fashioned general store. And that's what the woman who owns the place has created there. It's really cool because there's lots of memorabilia there. There's lots of, you know, decorated really cool. And there's also the local shop dog. What's the dog's name, Franny?
Brutus.
Brutus. Brutus, the shop dog. And Brutus is there to greet you.
He's so cute.
Lick your sweaty legs.
And face.
and face, if you get down there low enough for him to do that. But
well,
anyway,
he's my love.
Yeah, I know. Franny likes Brutus. So we basically flash mobbed the Hampton General
cash mobbed yes,
the Hampton General Store on Saturday, and brought in all rides led to the Hampton General Store. So we all ended up going there, all the different distances and all ended up at a rest stop.
Actually,
at the Hampton
it's cash
General
bomb
store. Cash bomb, yes, cash bombed. And it's great. I mean, the owner of the store was thrilled because
she was very happy.
She got to sell a lot of her baked goods. She's a great baker. And, you know, there's other stuff there, too. You can get drinks there. You can get all sorts of stuff. Ooh. So anyway, it's a good thing. There's the dog.
If
you're watching the screen right now, Fran has shown a picture of the dog. But the dog is what kind of dog is that?
I'm not sure. It's probably a pity mix or a pity.
Probably something like that. So anyway, for those of you who are listening to this in podcast, there's a cool little dog there, and the dog is very friendly and very happy
and gets fed a lot.
Yeah. It's got a little, the dog needs to get out and ride his bike, but anyway, that obviously doesn't work,
but he's also very lovely.
So anyway, we just had this lovely ride, and we're coming back. And we're almost back. We're really, really close. We're back on the road that I live on, and it's as we're going down a hill on that road, along comes the same scenario I had the day before with my friend Karen. Here comes a car from behind coming up real fast. How do I know? My radar told me that. So the car is coming up real fast, and there's a car coming in the opposite direction. There's no way that this car is going to get around us because we are now going downhill, probably at least 25 miles an hour. We are going downhill, and this car is coming up from behind, and this other car is coming up from the other direction. They're freaked out. I can see it because I look at the drivers. I look directly in the windshield of the drivers. They're freaked out. I get out in the road and I stick my hand out behind me and I yell out as loud as I can, not knowing whether the window is open or not. Doesn't really matter. I just yell out, stop, stop, like that. The vehicle comes to a stop, still hasn't overtaken us on our bikes, right? Comes to a stop 6 inches from the bumper of the vehicle going the other way. They stopped. We rode through. We talked about it a little bit as we continued our journey back to the North Windham School, which was really only about a half a mile away. And I never ever saw the car again. So I think they not only stopped, but they probably were a little freaked out that they just about had a head-on collision because of a very, very bad decision on their part. And I'm sure there were some words said, those stupid cyclists, you know, just wait. That's my whole point. Just wait. 32 seconds. 32 seconds out of your life. It's not going to kill you. You're going to spend more time in the drive-through lane. That's where this all goes. That's why I talk about this stuff all the time. When you're having conversations at your local family picnics or neighborhood picnics this time of year, whatever, relay what it's like to be a cyclist out on the road to someone who probably has no idea, and no idea exactly, you know, what position you're being put in because they might be 30 seconds late to work, or they might be 30 seconds late to the stop sign up ahead. What's the point, right? What's the point? Anyway, that's it. That's all I got on that one. But now, of course, you know what we have to talk about. It's the Tour de France. Tour de France, anyone? Anyone, right? Okay, stage one. Spoiler alerts, by the way, if you're not watching this yet, you should watch. Maybe you should, you know, turn down your volume, whatever, stick your fingers in yours. I don't care what you do. But I will not give you stage three because I have not seen stage three yet, and I'm not going to spoiler alert you on today's stage. But stage one, very cool. So here's what's going on with the tour this year. They started in Basque Country, and it's hilly. It's really hilly. Like, there's some challenging climbs. Things are really starting to come together. And, you know, it's like, it's not the opening time trial type scene like it usually is. So, anyway, that's kind of what's going on at this point. And it's very, very cool. So what happens is, of course, you know, we've got the big two here. We got Jonas and Tadej, and they are the two obvious choices to win the tour this year. And so we've got the Jumbo team and we've got the United Emirates team, and they're both very, very powerful teams. They're very well funded, and so that's, I think, what we're going to see the most of on this, although we might see a little bit out of Ineos. They're not as sharp as they used to be a few years ago. Who knows what the story is? It could be a money thing, it could be anything. You never know. But they also don't have the two hottest young superstars. So anyway, there are multiple attacks, lots of things going on, lots of rolly stuff. So, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to get away. And on the last climb, it's the Yates, not one Yate, not just Adam Yate, not just Simon Yate. No, it's both of them. Adam makes the move. Simon jumps with him, goes with him, and now these two guys riding together are going down the road. And let me tell you, if you're a professional cyclist and your last name is Yates, and you grew up with a twin brother who is also a Yates, you probably spent a lot of time working together out on your bikes. And these guys were like a machine going down the road. It was great. And they broke away and they stayed away. And that was just so, so cool. It was a brilliant move by United Emirates team because it took all the pressure off of Tadej Pogačar. And now there are two people to watch out for. So it kind of throws a little bit of a curveball at Jumbo. I thought it was brilliant. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. What a smart thing to do. You know, Adam's probably not going to be the GC contender, but he could be. He's that good. And so if anything does happen to Pogačar, then, you know, they've got a serious backup. But what they also have is, now it's not like you're just watching for one guy. Now you're watching for two. And it changes the chess game a little bit. It's kind of cool. Kind of cool. You know, it's like you're going after the queen, but the bishop and the knight are also about to pounce on you. So just to use that analogy. So it's very, very cool. So off they go, and Adam Yates is now in the yellow jersey, which is really, really cool. And stage two, this is funny. Victor Lafay, he surprised all the big names in the field in the GC to steal a stage win in San Sebastian after a tough day in the Basque country. So there it is. He's done it. He's a Frenchman. Okay. Good to win a stage when you're a Frenchman in the Tour de France. Doesn't happen that often anymore. Not only did he win, he rides for Cofidis, and it is the team's first win since 2008. Van Aert came up right alongside him. He wanted it, but there was no way. There's no way. This guy, Lefebvre, definitely got the jump on him, and Van Aert like punched his bars in frustration. But it was such a powerful attack with 900 meters to go. 900 meters. That's a long sprint. And I have a little note here, by the way, Phil. The correct pronunciation is Jonas Vingegaard, not Vingegaard or Vingego. Not that I'm very good at saying names, but anyway, I'm just saying. So anyway, lots and lots and lots of fun. There are just so many cool things going on. I've got a few more things here on the tour, more Tour de France information. Yeah, we're right here. And so we are currently, another interesting thing that's going on is Paulus from EF Education is, he's got the polka dot jersey. That we didn't see coming. We didn't see that at all. Now, the good news is he's got the polka dot jersey, so his team now has something to focus on because they lost one of their riders, where they lost their GC guy. Their GC guy went down, and the Movistar GC rider went down. I'll talk about that in a minute. So right now we have Yates holding the yellow jersey. We have Lefebvre actually holding the green jersey at this moment. I don't know what happened today. And then, of course, Paulus is holding the polka dot jersey, and Pogacar is the best young rider. Surprise, surprise. The guy's still young. He's still young. Remember, he won his first Tour de France a day before his 21st birthday. Remember that. That's like important stuff. So anyway, it looks like the Jumbo team and the EF Education team are the top two teams at this point. That's where we stand. So it's all good. So we'll see how this all goes. It's going to be very, very interesting. I just peeked it today, and I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but there's definitely some interesting things that are going on in the Tour de France right now. So starting it in a hilly area is very, very interesting way to do it, and it changes the whole composition of the race. I like it. So, you know, but I like the hills. I like watching riders in the hills, which brings me to the hardest climbs in the Tour de France for 2023. So let's see what we got here. There are some kickers. The hardest climb. Here's top three picks. All right. The Col de la Lose. It's an absolutely massive climb. Not only does it almost count as a mountaintop finish to stave 17, there's a few kilometers descending right after it, and then another decent kicker, but ramps through undoubtedly classify this as the climb of the tour. And what are you looking at? Okay, 9.2 kilometers at 7%, 10.2 kilometers at 8.5%. Kickers with a total of 28.3 kilometers at an average of 6%. That's a long time to be climbing above 5%. If you're a rider, you know what I'm talking about. Grand Combier, The Grand Colombier is a classic for the tour. It's 18 kilometers at 7%, right at the finish of what should prove to be a very decisive stage 13. There's multiple stretches in there, greater than 9%, and should prove to be a loud wake-up call in the climbs for the days to come. Number three on the list is the Col de Tourmalet. Yeah, the Tourmalet is just, it's always a biggie. It's a classic. It's been going on forever. That's on stage six. That's coming up really, really soon. So we're on stage three today. Remember that. It's another classic and well-known to past tours. Brutal 17.2 kilometers at 7.3% average. It only ranks lower than the Grand the Colombier, which we talked about just before, because it's right in the middle of the stage and not a mountaintop finish. So while this is to be the first major climb of the tour, huge GC gaps probably won't form. They're probably, everybody's going to keep it together. One of my favorites, I've been watching the tour for a long time. Actually, that was Tourmalet. Next is the Col du Jouplan, and that is stage 14, 11.7 kilometers, 8.5%. Ouch. Again, it's going to be a leg breaker. And one of my favorites, that's where I was going to, number five here on the list is the Puy de Dôme. The Puy de Dôme is a solid 14 kilometers, 7.7%, and takes the fifth slot from a close sixth of stage five, while the Col de Soleil, what has slightly more climbing involved, the steepness of the Puy de Dôme and the fact that it's a finishing climb, it's a mountaintop finish, led it to snag that slot. So there you go. That's the top five that we see right here. And I agree with a lot of this. This is coming from a site, of course. This is the procyclingbets.com. Fun, fun stuff. Let's put in a couple of the hardest stages here. The Queen Stage. Stage 15 has been selected by these folks as the Queen Stage, known as the hardest mountain climbing stage in professional cycling multi-day stage race. None of the top five hardest climbs featured in the stage, but the quantity and quality of these climbs combined to lengthy 180 kilometers, making it an easy pick for the Queen Stage. It comes after the brutal stage 14, so the riders are coming in tired, and features nine climbs in total, and call outs being 7.2 kilometers at 7.5%, 11.7 kilometers at 7%, 4.6 kilometers at 6%, 2.7 kilometers at 10%, and the mountaintop finish, Le Bête, as the mountaintop finish at 7.3 kilometers at 7.8%. Ouch, ouch, ouch. That's gonna hurt. And you know, that's what we're looking at. It's the Tour de France, folks. It's a big deal. There's just a ton of climbing this year. There are going to be some fast sprinter stages. Maybe one was today. I might have been one today. Anyway, we'll find out. It's the Tour. It's great. I love the Tour. I can't get enough out of it. It's just such a good time. We've got all sorts of wonderful stuff coming up in the future. The 2023 route is just brutal. There's just so many tough stages in here. So we'll see what happens. But this weekend, we're going to the Puy de Dôme on Sunday, so that'll be interesting. And, you know, we'll see how this all works out. And I can't wait. I can't wait. It's such a good time this time of year. So that's my big shout outs to the Tour de France right now. And what else have I got on the list here today? And, oh, I know what it was. There is one more thing here in the Tour de France that I wanted to mention. And that is that two of the big stage winners or grand GC riders, Enric Mas from the Movistar team has withdrawn after stage one, bad crash. And Richard Carapaz, also involved in the same crash, who rides for EF Education, Easy Post, also, same crash. They were both involved in it. Carapaz went down really hard. He got up and he was just limping really badly, and come to find out, he fractured his kneecap. So, not good. So, now we got two GC guys out. Two teams that no longer have a GC contender. Who are they going to rely on? They're going to have to dig on, they're going to have to pick on a domestique who was designed to, you know, do some heavy climbing and some heavy work and, you know, change the roles around a little bit. We'll see what happens. Could be interesting. You never know. There's a lot of youngsters. There's a lot of up-and-comers. You just never know. I just wouldn't want to be going back against either Tadej or Jonas right now, because they're both like incredibly good at what they're doing. And there's others too. There's just so many others. So that's about all I have here, because if I go any further here, I'm going to run out of time. A quick little shout out here. Why trails? Okay, I talk about rail trails a lot. I think rail trails are the growth of cycling as we know it in this country. I think that they are putting people in safer places. They are making a big impact. And there was a study done finishing the Mass Central Trail could deliver over $200 million in annual benefits. Think about that. One rail trail, $200 million. Just from use of cafes and lodging and, you know, it just people on bikes. We spend money. We like to eat. We like to drink. And we like to ride our bikes. And then we like to do it again and again and again. And it's fun. And we can do it with the family if we're on a rail trail, if we're on a trail that has protected lane, whatever it is. We can get out and safely ride our bikes. Trails are the answer. They really are, and they make a huge impact. I'm going to move on here and remind everyone that the bicycle game is still going on the history, early history of bicycles in Hartford at the Connecticut Historical Society. The 110th edition of the 2023 Tour de France is obviously in line, and we will be talking a lot more about that. The 78th edition of the Tour of the Vuelta a España takes place in Barcelona on August 26th, 2023. The Quiet Corner Bike Tour, which I will talk about next week, is presented by the Thread City Cyclers. It's an event on Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. And you can find out more about that on Bike Reg, or you can go to the threadcitycyclers.com. And also, August 19th, the 32nd Annual Steeplechase Bike Tour. Both the Thread City ride and this ride both feature an 18-mile gravel ride for gravel people. Finishing points. The battle with the almighty SUV. I know, it's not a weapon. Oops, I mean a car. It's the driver, right? Why are people so much more aggressive when they have a weapon? Oops, I said it again. I mean, steering wheel in their hands. We are just people out riding bikes for recreation, business, commuting, general use, which helps us park our motorized vehicles. Oh, and for your information, I broke my personal record last week and my car remained silent for 3 days. Pretty cool, huh? It's Tour de France time. More in the weeks to come. Who's your pick to win the tour this year? Have you checked out that new Netflix trailer, Unchained, yet? Are you ready to become a bicycle advocate? Come join us at the Boombox Parade. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. I'll say it again. It won't be by last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. You may just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Maybe tomorrow. WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Maybe tomorrow.